I'm Richard Lindley. I've worked for more than 30 years as a television journalist for both Panorama and ITN News. Now, at age 83, I have dementia. I suffer from Alzheimer's, but I still much enjoy talking to my friends and colleagues. Today, one of those friends is with me now, the former political advisor, David Rogers. Welcome.
Richard, it's such a delight to be with you talking about politics. I remember, as you do, I'm sure, the days when the Conservative Party didn't even elect a leader. There was a magic circle who advised the Queen. And it wasn't until the days of Alec Douglas Hume, and then Ted Heath, and then Margaret Thatcher, that they had elections. And then they didn't have many candidates. Now they've got masses of them. And I just wondered what you thought, looking back, how Margaret Thatcher was compared with Theresa May.
Well, I think Theresa May has been a phenomenon. I've not seen anything like it before. And that is what part of the problem is, common sense, isn't it? People look at her and they think, how can somebody get on in that sort of way?
I think you're absolutely right on that, because one of the things that both Theresa May and Margaret Thatcher had, they were determined in what they were trying to do, like Theresa May and Brexit, and Margaret Thatcher with the coal miners and being a milk snatcher. But they never actually had any real interest in why people were conservatives and what made people vote conservative. But the thing they don't share is that Margaret Thatcher is so obviously a born leader, and Theresa May is very much a subordinate. Oh, and the other thing that they've got in common is neither of them ever used to frequent the bars of Westminster. Now, an awful lot of male prime ministers used to do that in their younger days, and that made them able to build up a background of networking which are extremely useful to them. The difference between Margaret Thatcher leaving office and Theresa May leaving office is not nearly as strong as the similarities. They've both been forced out, mainly by men, and they're both a bit tearful as they left. One of the differences was that Margaret Thatcher immediately stood again to try and be elected, but she didn't get enough votes, and so she stood down after the first vote. She could have carried on. She passed the threshold of a number of votes to go in for the second ballot, but she stood down. Whereas so far, Theresa May showed no indication whatsoever that she's going to stand again. But she's got to Monday morning to do it. To be a great Prime Minister, to be a great leader, I think one of the most important things is to have a hinterland, to have a background, like Ted Heath with his sailing and music. Alec Douglas Hume used to win prizes for flower arranging. Margaret Thatcher and Theresa May don't seem to have any background of hobbies or interests. Certainly if they have, they keep very quiet about them. But I think if you don't have that, then that's one of the things that will slowly drive you mad. And there have been a number of examples of prime ministers who, if not clinically mad, have often actually not been acting all that normally. Gordon Brown, Harold Wilson, Tony Blair, goes on. The other thing, Richard, why I'm so glad to be here today, is to talk about your book on Panorama, because I thought there were two really brilliant things in that book. The first was the insight into how television, public affairs, and politics, broadcasting, grow up. And the other was, it's the first time I've ever read anything about the background of what makes a television producer. And in your book, you had a lovely chapter on that, subtitled Television Producers, Bosses or Bag Carriers. And you were asking me about being a parliamentary advisor. And one of the jobs when I was doing that for John Major was to bring in people he wanted to talk to, who he found interesting. And one of the people I brought in was, and I can't do it as well as you can, but your lovely wife, Carol Stone.
Wonderful.
And the Prime Minister really enjoyed that enormously. And then he took us all racing at Huntingdon one weekend. And John really enjoyed Carol coming in because it meant he could relax and get away from people coming in that had an axe to grind or wanted to get something from him. And of course, as you know, Carol is absolutely brilliant at talking to people. When you were interviewing people, you often found that they couldn't cope with silence. So if you didn't ask a question, but you just made eye contact and kind of nodded, they would then think they had to break in and say something because they were getting anxious and worried. And then you got a good answer. Another thing you said in your book was how marvellous it was to have such a lovely job where you could wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to go out and get the truth, when so many other people were trying to hide the truth. And one of the things we talked about after lunch was what was new in politics compared with when we first came in. And there are two things, I think, that have made an enormous difference. One is that parliamentary private secretaries used to be appointed by ministers themselves. And that goes back to the days when civil servants actually sat in Parliament themselves and ministers had immediate access. But from the end of the 19th century, civil servants were banned from sitting in Parliament. And so if the minister wanted quick information, he had to have somebody sitting behind him to run to the civil service box on the floor of the House of Commons to get that information. And started off with friends, often relatives of the minister, doing that. And now it's all become in the hands of the whips. And ministers have no idea who their PPS is going to be. And the same thing's happened with peering. In what I still call the good old days, a Member of Parliament would find somebody on the other side to pair with. So when I worked with Ian McLeod, I arranged the pairing arrangements with Jim McCallaghan's PPS, as Jim was then Chancellor of the Exchequer and Ian was Shadow Chancellor, and they arranged it as friends. Nowadays, people have no idea who they're going to pair with, and that's why an awful lot of accidents happen. And it takes away the kind of friendship, the inter-parliamentary friendship that used to exist. And before 1965, the Conservatives didn't have any kind of election for a leader. That's why they only changed their leader in government, so they'd be choosing a new prime minister. And the Queen would take advice from people like the Chief Whip, the retiring Prime Minister, the Lord Chancellor, and she would then summon somebody to the palace, as she did Alec Douglas Hume when Howard Macmillan stepped down, and invite them to form a government. And they would go back and they would see if they could form a government. And it was very difficult. Howard Macmillan left Alec Douglas Hume in a bit of a mess because people like Ian McLeod and Enoch Powell and possibly Rab Butler just refused to serve. But nevertheless, he formed a government. It could well be the case today where if Boris Johnson becomes elected leader of the Conservative Party, Theresa May goes and hands in her seals of office as Prime Minister, has to accept the Prime Minister's advice to ask Boris Johnson to form a government. And it could well be the case Boris Johnson goes back to the Commons, goes back to talk to the Conservative members of Parliament and can't get enough support, and has to go back and say, I'm sorry, Your Majesty, I can't form a government. So the Queen is then put in a very difficult position because she can go to another Conservative or, of course, she can go to the leader of the opposition. For Jeremy Corbyn to be elected as Prime Minister would mean that, first of all, the Conservative Party would have to admit to the monarch that it can no longer find somebody in its own ranks to form a government to act as Prime Minister. The monarch then summons Jeremy Corbyn to the palace, and as he refused her invitation to the banquet for President Trump, that might be a bit of a frosty meeting, and she asks him. Now, it may well be that he can't form a government. So then it's equally possible that somebody in the Liberal Democrats, their new leader by then, can say, OK, I think I might be able to form a coalition. I think I can get enough people from Labour, from Conservatives and our own party to have a coalition government. Now, all those are possibilities, but these are completely uncharted waters because we've got an unwritten constitution. We've always operated by protocol. And the protocol in the past has always been, if a Prime Minister can't get their business through the House of Commons, they resign. This hasn't happened. Politics, Prayer and Parliament is a book that I wrote 20 years ago, really to show the strong similarities between being a priest and being a Member of Parliament. Both are professionals. Both depend on volunteers and amateurs. Both have their own patch, a parish or a constituency. both depend on the word, either the spoken word or the written word. Both had competition, Conservative, Labour, Liberal, Methodist, Roman Catholic, Presbyterian. Both are more likely to be stabbed in the back by their own side than we are by another side. And even today, both were expected to bring along a spouse who acts as an unpaid helper. Now, that, I think, is a strong similarity. And also, both need to escape from their constituency and their parish from time to time in order to relax.
Thanks, David, and thank you for the fascinating things you've said.
Richard, as always, it's been a tremendous joy to talk with you. Thank you very much.